big show for you here today. It is the final edition of Mock Draft Monday for the 2026 NFL draft season. And for the final one, we got the man himself, Daniel Jeremiah, joins us to break down his five favorite player to team fits and his player that he is standing on the table for. I'll let you guys know, I also just kind of hijacked a good section of this show to have some wide receiver talk with DJ. So you're going to get some information on Jordan Tyson, Mekhi Lemon, Casey Concepcion chatter in here. Tons of great wide receiver stuff, but that's of course not all DJ is bringing to the table. Real quick disclaimer on this one, we did record it prior to the Giants and Bengals big trade involving Dexter Lawrence. So keep that in mind as you listen to us talk about the Giants, some of the Jordan Tyson speculation right at the top of this show, but tons of stuff to get into here. Malachi Lawrence involved in the proceedings once again. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everyone? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball because it's officially draft week. This thing is happening. And with that, no better time for today's episode of Mock Draft Monday than to welcome on the man himself. You know him, NFL Network's draft analyst. Now a member of ESPN, too, which, of course, you can watch the draft live on ESPN and ABC in Pittsburgh, April 23rd to the 25th. Yeah, that's right. It's Daniel Jeremiah himself. DJ, appreciate you for doing this. What's going on, man?
Oh, not much. I think we both got our draft haircut for the week, so we're ready to go, dialed.
You're about half right for that. I still got mine coming. I got to blast the sides a little bit more.
You're gonna take it all the way up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Listen. You can, of course, watch the draft. You should be watching the draft with DJ. I appreciate that, but I got to be a little bit better. Okay. You guys are going to watch the draft with DJ on the TV. Your second screen experience, of course, is going to be the Yahoo Sports live draft show as well. And I can promise the folks out there two things. Number one, I'm going to have a better looking haircut than that. Number two, I will not be shooting the show from my mom's condo in Florida, which is, if you're watching us on YouTube, you're like, Harmon left the 5x5 space they make him stay in, you know, 24/7. In fact, yes, I like to think I'm a pretty good wide receiver analyst, DJ. I also like to think that I'm a better son. So I'm here in Florida helping my mom out with a few things for a couple of days. So we did make this work shooting in a different location.
You're a good man. And I got you right now, by the way, as a 3-point favorite in the afternoon shuffleboard. It's going to be competitive, but I think you've got the stamina to go ahead and see that thing to the finish line.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm going to do on the shuffleboard, which obviously, of course, is dominate. That's for later on in the day. For right now, though, we got to give the people what they came here for, which is, as always on Mock Draft Monday, we get the best of the best, and we save the best for last here with our guy, Daniel Jeremiah, to get five favorite player to team fits that these guys are mock drafting, that they're projecting. And then, of course, we're going to finish it up with a player that DJ is standing on the table for in the 2026 NFL draft. And we will talk a lot about why it's a good or bad idea to maybe stand on tables for prospects when we get to that. But for now, let's waste no more time. Welcome to our final edition of Mock Draft Monday. All right, DJ, let's get into it. And we're starting in the top five here. Who is your first favorite player to team fit for the 2026 NFL draft?
Yeah, this is my favorite fit. Now, as we've come to the conclusion of the process, I don't think it's going to happen. So I'm not going to get what I want here, it sounds like, Matt. But I love the Sonny Styles fit with the New York Giants. And to me, I you can see what he is on the screen here. The measurables are just stupid. You know, when you have some rare measurables to go along with the intangibles that he possesses. And then I look at the division, and, you know, we always talk about you got to build your team to win your division. And it's not just for where the division is now, but going off into the future. You know, when you look at the future of the quarterback in that division, the quarterbacks in that division, I think Jaden Daniels has to be front of mind. I know they didn't have the year that they wanted last year, and he got hurt. But having somebody that's, you know, specifically equipped to be able to defend him and what he does and be able to, you know, you want to try and run on the outside of the perimeter, no problem. He can do it. He's going to try and take off. Once the defense expands, Styles can close that down. You want to RPO it. Now I've got a, a freaking pterodactyl in the middle of the field, you know, with his length that you got to throw around and navigate through. So, by the way, pterodactyls, is that, those are short arms or long arms?
No, those are the big winged dinosaurs, the big winged dinosaurs.
Thank you. Yeah. I was looking for condor, but somehow pterodactyl came out. But
no,
I
you guess got
if
it.
You've got the wings there, that works. That works. Yeah. So, I mean, I just love that for that reason. I think he's such a good fit there. But again, as we were talking before we came on, I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think they're going to go there.
Well, we'll come back to what you think is going to happen with this Giants pick here at five in just a second. But I do want to pull on the Sonny Styles thread here for just a moment, because I obviously wide receiver is my bread and butter. It's my favorite position to evaluate. But on the other side of the ball, linebacker has become just like a pet project for me, like looking at these guys, especially within the context of what they can do in a modern defense. And DJ, I'll give you credit for this one. Like three, I think it was 3 years ago on Mock Draft Monday that you and I were talking about how some of these big, tall linebackers were really going to start to become these premium players because of exactly the pterodactyl thing there. Like, just think about all these teams they want to attack over the middle of the field, whether it's RPOs or we're trying to throw over linebackers on dig routes, off play action, really try to strike in the heart of a defensive, you know, kind of eco, like the heart of the defense right there in the middle of the field. Well, what makes that a little bit more difficult when the linebackers are pushing 6'5", when they have that pterodactyl wingspan to clog up the lanes? We were talking about that, like I said, 3 years ago, and Jahad Campbell was one of the guys in last year's first round, at the very end of the first round, that kind of had that dimension. But Styles is just like that, you know, 2X, 3X, however you want to say it. So he really has been to me a guy that I've gravitated to throughout the process, is one of my favorite prospects in the class.
Yeah, and I think you'll see Jahad Campbell take off. You know, he was a little bit blocked there. N'Kobe Dean's gone. I think you'll see him blossom and emerge there in Philly. But this is, like you said, this is just a bigger, rangier, you know, more instinctive version of Jahad Campbell. So I'm a big believer in him. And then you take that, you know, and you marry it with the, you know, middle linebacker. I always talk about it. We've talked about it before. Up the middle of your team, you know, your intangibles, your leadership, your communication, all that stuff matters more so than, you know, the perimeter position. So, and he's elite in those areas. So yeah, to me, he's a statement pick. What I thought would be a great statement pick for the Giants. New coach. This is a new era. This is kind of going to be a guy that kind of says what we're about.
I ran this theory by Dane Brugler last week on Mock Draft Monday when talking about D'Angelo Pons, who's a guy that, you know, Dane was saying, I could see him maybe playing a little bit more outside just with the skill set, the tenacity, then maybe he just has to be a nickel corner based on the dimensions and everything. And again, obviously, Sonny Styles is not, he's a linebacker. He's not Nicky Manwari. He's not necessarily going to be one of these big nickel players. But DJ, do you think there's anything to the fact that because we're getting, and this is obviously moves and counter moves, right? Same with slot receivers. We're going to talk about a receiver with our next pick here as well. Slot receiver, like the idea of that player is changing. Those slot players are the big slots, the power slots. They're getting bigger. Well, so are the nickels as well. Do you think there's anything to it that, like, these body types, whether it's a linebacker like Styles or a big nickel like a Nicky Manwari, who's kind of blurring the lines there, does that allow you to maybe look for different body types at corner? Maybe those smaller players can be more eligible there, because the traditional nickel corner, your small man coverage player, is not that same body type you're looking for there.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's just because you could bring those guys into run fits, you know. So now you don't get that advantage anymore. So to used to try and hide a little corner in the slot, and now you get exposed with a little corner in the spot, because they're gonna everything's condensed and you're in run fits 24/7. They're not gonna block you. They're gonna leave you alone and ask you to tackle a 220-pound back time after time after time. So now it makes more sense. If you want to hide a smaller corner, you're almost better off hiding them out on the perimeter. So that, and he's like, when we get to him, that's a different discussion, but like that's where he is. That's where he's comfortable. Amik Robertson's been one of those guys who's undersized, but is just more comfortable on the outside than he is on the inside. So, you know, he's a good football player, but I do think the body types, when you have guys like Sonny Styles, even Warrior, I see it doing the Charger games with Derwin James. These guys just, it's such an advantage. You know, you can't manipulate formations and stuff to put guys in a bad spot, because he can do everything.
Yeah, it's such a huge advantage to have one of these body types on your defense right now, which is why we think Sonny Styles should be a highly drafted player. But you don't think this pick is going to happen here. You don't think Sonny Styles is going at five. What do you think could happen with the Giants at five?
Well, I, you know, this is kind of, as we're coming down the home stretch here, and a couple names that popped up was, okay, Jeremiah Love was still alive there, which would be so interesting, because you literally have the whole Saquon Barkley saga, and now you go take a running back up there at the top, which would be, I'm sure the fans would be talk radio fodder. Like, you'd have a good day on talk radio. I love Jeremiah Love, no pun intended, but that's one. And then I've heard Jordan Tyson's name connected with them a lot as a receiver that they really like, and whether or not that they pull the trigger there, or whether it would be in a trade down scenario, trade back a few spots. You know, if Love's there on the clock, you know, and we can just have some fun here. If you're the Rams and you want to try and go all in, and you're this close to winning a Super Bowl, I've been saying it may be tempting. You know, I know they've got two backs, but they don't have one like Jeremiah Love. And it would kind of bring back a little bit of the ode to the Todd Gurley days of having a freak back there and what that can look like. Maybe that's a trade partner for him, and they're thinking that that maybe puts him in Jordan Tyson range. But if they went back to 13, the buzz on Tyson, you know, coming down to the end here, I'm not so sure he even makes it to 13. So just those are two of the names that I've heard over the last week.
Well, this is great, because I had already planned to kind of hijack the show when we get to our second player and turn this into a wide receiver discussion. So we're going to go ahead and do this right here and start this with Jordan Tyson. Tyson is such a fascinating player to me, because I do think, like, I know we can't put the medicals aside. Obviously, that's a huge part of this discussion. But in one sense, I almost kind of want to think about him as a player just without the medicals, right? Because that's a huge deal. Of course, it is something to consider, and we'll see what happens here. We're recording this on Friday, April 17th at the workout. He's not going to do any testing, so I really don't know, like, what questions we're going to answer here with Tyson. But beyond just the medical part of it, DJ, what do you think of him as a pure receiver? Because I have found him to be obviously a really appealing player, and I do think he has the ceiling to be the best receiver in the class. But where do you kind of see some of the gaps in his game that might prevent him from being that player? Because I do think those gaps exist.
Yeah, I think he's a very talented dude. Like, he's, you know, in terms of that he's loose, he's fluid, he's creative, which is a good thing and a bad thing. I think we can kind of get into that a little bit. But the, you know, the acrobatic nature down the field to be able to contort his body and kind of hover in the air and make catches, like, all that stuff's great. I think he's got a feel for setting guys up. I think he's got some, you know, he can explode when he snaps it off. My concerns with him, you know, the physicality, just in terms of when he gets nose to nose, down after down after down, I'd be curious, and I haven't even seen your chart yet. I'd be curious to see it in the press stuff. I think there's still some improvement that can be done there. I think, you know, contested catches, you know, combat catches, finishing a little more consistently there. And then, truthfully, maybe the biggest thing for me is just there's just not a whole lot of run after catch. You know, it's just there isn't there. You know, I going through my notes and I'm looking for, like, breaks tackles. I don't see it. Like, that's not what he does. So those are legitimate concerns. As a player, my first list, I had him as my 15th guy. I think on my final list, I think he's going to be 18 or 19, like somewhere around there. And he's going to go, I concede, he's going to go way higher than that. But the injuries coupled with some of those other things, I don't know. That's why I just couldn't get fully on board with that one.
It's so interesting. You're kind of going down where the league is going up in a way with Tyson, which I think is really fascinating. So yeah, just some of the reception perception notes on Tyson. I posted this today, actually, you know, because trying to catch that wave with his workout coming. That's what you do when you're a content guy here. Jordan Tyson, in terms of success rate versus zone coverage, 85.6%. It's the best in this class. It's not just the best in this class. It's the fifth best mark since 2021 for a Power 5 receiver that I've charted. So that's obviously great. And you see that ability, as you mentioned, the fluidity, the looseness he has as a player to really set guys up, especially in the intermediate area when, you know, it's off man, it's a zone coverage look. But you said it, like, press coverage, I've found – he obviously, this is why I compare him to Amari Cooper, DJ, because I think like his best stuff, you put together his 10 best routes, you're like, oh my God, that's the best receiver in the class. And same thing with Amari Cooper. Mm-hmm. You'd put together his best 10 routes at times, you'd be like, that's the best receiver in the league. But there's a lot of other stuff away from the ball where the targets don't go his way that I think is a little bit more concerning for me. Press coverage is a 30th percentile mark in reception perception. His contested catch rate is below average. You talk about going down on first contact. He goes down on first contact all the time. All the time. Mm-hmm. Like he is consistently brought down by the first defender. Over 70% of his in-space attempts that I charted, 74%, he went down on first contact. So like, yeah, there's obviously really appealing marks, but I think you do have to weigh some of those negatives. And I think it's almost gotten lost in the toughness discussion. Like, I don't think he's an untough player, or he's soft or anything like that.
I want to get into that, because I'm glad you said that.
Yeah.
Because I think some of it's has been directed at me, because I've said, like, see, I was asked about him in the Rams, and I said, he doesn't fit to me the Rams style of player. Like, there's just a toughness with those guys. And what I'm talking about is, you know, grounded through the catch, running through contact, firm to the ball. You know, and even like some of the blocking stuff, like he's shown he's willing. I mean, there's much worse blocking receivers than him in this draft. He's okay there. But like, I didn't watch him and feel that doesn't feel like a Rams player to me. Whereas some of those other guys, more so the way they, you know, are just stronger and firmer to the ball. And then what happened was it got so convoluted, and it was like, oh, so you wanted him to play through a blown out knee. Oh, he broke his collarbone. Was he supposed to go out there with what? Right. And like, this has not, those are two totally different conversations. Like, there's the durability, which it's been every year. And I'm not saying that that's, you know, that guarantees he's going to be hurt every year. So the collarbone thing's a fluke thing for sure. But he's got some soft tissue stuff. But that's a totally different conversation than the toughness conversation.
Right. The guy went out and played, and I think Hines Ward, his receiver coach at Arizona, was talking about this. Plenty of people have talked about it. He went out there and like finished a game after the hamstring injury. We're not saying he's not a tough player. It's just some of those, whether you want to call it physical aspects of playing the position, those are not his areas of strength. But DJ, like, you can work around a player that has some of those issues. It's just you got to find the right ecosystem and the right deployment for the guy.
The right fit. This is what, 100%.
Yeah. This is why I talked about him again as that Amari Cooper player. Nate and I on Football 301, our 2-hour receiver preview, so God help you if you stuck through that whole episode. We talked, and Nate was with Amari Cooper in a couple of years with Oakland. So like, he was around Amari and talked about this. Like, Amari's best years came at the very end of his Raiders tenure and with the Cowboys, when they moved him to Z, when he was like a movement Z receiver that they'd go, you know, kind of move him around the formation, let him get those matchups and let him get the free releases. And I think for Tyson, that's probably how you want to deploy him. You want him off the ball. You want him moving around so that he can run those routes that we're seeing here in the intermediate area, digs, outs, like put the foot in the ground, no dancing at the top of routes, which I think he's guilty of doing. Put the foot in the ground and explode out of the break. And I think that was Cooper's best stuff. But I also know, and you know this for as long as you've been doing it, that a 6'2", 203-pound receiver, some teams see that guy and they're like, well, that's our X receiver. Because look at these highlight wins versus press. So I just think for Tyson, he's somebody that when we get the landing spot, whether it's New York at 5 or something like that, we'll be able to kind of have this discussion about, all right, who are the other guys in the room? Can he get that kind of deployment? Because I think that would set him up for the success that people who are really high on him, including those in the league, really think he could reach.
Yeah. And again, it's the good is really good. And I don't want that to get lost at all in the discussion. It is really good. And there's a reason why so many teams love him. And yeah, he's going to go because of it. But I just, to me, the deployment, to use your word, is going to be everything with him. You know, if you're asking him to do some of those other things that concern us, I don't think that's going to go great. But if you put him in and highlight what he can do and loosen him up a little bit, yeah, he's going to be outstanding. He'll be a really, really good player, and just cross your fingers and toes that he can, you know, stay healthy and get through the year. So he's a fascinating one, man. He's almost kind of a poster child for this draft, where it's just, there's no clean path. There's just holes, and there's no perfect prospects. But this year, it feels more so than any other that it's like you got to navigate around some traffic with all these guys.
Yeah, I can already tell that on Thursday when he gets drafted, when we do our live show, the producers are going to be in my ear like, move on, stop talking about this, because I'm going to have like 1,000 thoughts to unfurl once we finally do know where he lands. But you mentioned you don't see him as a Rams receiver. However, your second favorite player to team fit that we're going to talk about here is the Rams taking a receiver. So let's hear it.
Yeah, Mekhi Lemon out of USC going to the Rams. I can see him, you know, again, those condensed formations, you ask him to dig someone out in the run game, he'll do it. Working in traffic in the middle of the field, you know, catching layered throws from Matthew Stafford, you know, attacking the football, running through contact. Like that's what he does and what he excels at. You get a soft corner, you want to just pitch it out there, get in his hands, let him, you know, break a tackle, make somebody miss, do something out in space. I just think he would be, you know, with the other guys they have in place already there, man, this could be that last little piece for that team.
Yeah, it would be a clear signal, I think, that they're, again, just pushing. They want this offense, you know, and Peter Schrager, who, of course, is really tight with those in the Rams organization, he talked about, like, Mekhi Lemon is everything that Les Snead and Sean McVay love, like, tough as nails, absolute dog, and I co-sign all of that. I completely agree. I think I want to talk about Mekhi Lemon. And kind of break down his game, because I have a lot of thoughts about that. But just sticking on the Rams taking not just a receiver here at 13, but Mekhi Lemon specifically, DJ, I think, like, I've been trying to wish cast them taking a guy like KC Concepcion at 13 for two reasons. One, he's my guy. I love the player and I want to see him go to a good spot. So that's the selfish part of it. But number two, I also think he brings them like a type that they don't already have in the room. Do you view Mekhi Lemon as a little bit of like a hat on a hat with what they've already got with Puka Nacua? And if that pick does happen, do you think that says something about, you know, kind of the current state of Nacua and the Rams and everything going on there?
Yeah, I would say it's more of a, it's more of a substitute than a compliment, you know, to go back to those terms. Like, he feels very similar in that vein of receiver, and Cooper would have been in that, Cooper or Cup would be in that boat as well. I think the thing that you said, which I'll take a sidestep here, but Concepcion, the proof of concept is when Odell was there. Like that's that skill set. That's who he, you know, you could make that comparison. And you know, when he was healthy out there, especially that Super Bowl, being at that Super Bowl before he got hurt, it was like, whoa, okay, that looks a little different now.
This guy's about to win MVP.
He really was. I think people forget that. Everybody, for him, it's the catch and it's the Giants and everybody thinks about that, but they don't realize if he stayed healthy in that Super Bowl, they could not cover him. Like, that was a major, major matchup in the favor of the Rams in that game. That could have changed his legacy.
Yeah, 100%. Like, he was having that type of game and he brought something that was just such a different dimension. That's why I have really thought about the KC Concepcion part of this, because they have like the red zone aspect of what they got out of Odell Beckham with Davante Adams. But I think at 33, obviously, he's not giving you the verticality. He's not giving you that. Yeah. I can line up against press man coverage and run some of those backside digs and deep routes and stuff like that. Concepcion absolutely does that. I know he's got a drop problem. The YouTube comments are going to light me up for the 100th time about, yeah, he's dropped too many footballs. But I think that he is one of those guys, DJ, that drops the easy ones but makes the spectacular ones. And that sort of, I know that's like more frustrating for fans, but to me, that's like, I don't think it's a tracking issue. I think he does need to clean up some stuff at the catch point. But he would have been my wide receiver one, if not for those issues. So I am accounting for that. But yeah, he just brings like a different dimension to what they would already have. But Lemon would, again, be kind of, he would perfectly fit the ecosystem, and this is the right spot
Typecast.
For Lemon. This is the right spot for Lemon to go to be a guy that could be the most productive receiver from this class. So when you've looked at Lemon, how do you sort of think he's the guy? Is he a guy that really just embodies some of the changing types and like vision of what a wide receiver is in the modern game in 2025, 2026, et cetera?
Yeah, I also think, just to reiterate your previous point, the, you know, when they took Puka, people could have criticized that and said, well, this is Cooper Kupp. Like, don't they want, you know, something different? Like, it's kind of a duplication of what they have. Like, no, actually, they just have a type and they've been really, really good at identifying this type of player and they know exactly what to do and how to deploy this player. So to me, you talk about where the game is at. You know, being able to make things happen with the ball in your hands after the catch is, you know, never been more important than it is now. The defensive structures that you're seeing, they're conceding things. So, in other words, if they're going to concede these, you know, 6-8 yard throws here. It's nice when 6 to 8s turn into, you know, 14s to 18s, you know, versus catch and fall guys. They're just not going to let you get as vertical down the field. It's just harder. It's never been harder than it is right now to get explosives and to get vertical. So you're trying to find ways to get explosives in the run game. You're trying to do it, you know, with 13 personnel stuff that we're seeing, trying to figure out a way to still get explosives in a different way. And one of the ways is, okay, we can catch and run. Like if you can catch and run, that's a way where we're going to be able to get some explosive plays. It's just become so hard to get on top of people anymore. So I think that having that skill set that he possesses, I think it's a good match for where the game is right now.
Yeah, I just think the number one thing you want out of a high volume, you know, number one receiver right now is you want him to have spatial awareness against zone coverage. Like, and I think he's got that in spades. You know, is he the body type that we would have taken at 13th overall 10 years ago? Probably not. But it's not 2016 anymore. And I do feel like some of the pushback that I've seen with Mekhi Lemon, whether it's people you talk to or stuff you read, whatever, it's a little bit dated in terms of just what archetype of wide receiver is most productive in the NFL right now. And I just think from an archetype standpoint, DJ, this guy's right in there. And it's funny, like the Amon-Ra St. Brown comp, I kind of ranted about this on my YouTube channel late last week, where when we're comparing him to Amon-Ra St. Brown, like which Amon-Ra St. Brown are we comparing him to? Is it is it year two St. Brown? Is it rookie year St. Brown? Or is it right now Amon-Ra St. Brown? Because those are two vastly different players because of the improvement the guy's undergone in the 5 years he's been in the NFL.
No, it's a fair point. The other comp I was looking at the other day that I kicked around with him was, and I know this is a different era, but the way Edelman played, I could see Mekhi Lemon being just high volume in there. And just having, again, you talk about the feel, the awareness, the instincts, having that in spades, having, you know, earning the trust of your quarterback really early on in his career. He's very comfortable navigating those waters in the middle of the field. It's very easy for him. You know, I'm hopeful that eventually, you know, like an Amon-Ra, you can line him up anywhere and do anything with him. Now I'm hoping that's, you know, an evolution for him as he goes forward. I know he's played outside as well, but I think, man, he's like a better version of Khalil Shakir would be another one. I think you could have that conversation, that style of player. Yeah. But these guys all this what he has, this, you know, prototype or what have you, like it all plays. Like I think it's a very high floor player in this draft.
Very high floor is the way I keep coming back to too. Is it like, yeah, there's a chance that Mekhi Lemon, and again, it probably happens if he doesn't go to the right landing spot. This would be one of those right landing spots where he goes to the Rams, and especially those of us doing like dynasty rookie content, we're feeling really good about the present and the future of what's going to happen with Mekhi Lemon. If he goes to a different spot, yeah, maybe he turns into that Khalil Shakir type player. My guess is the teams that view him as a Khalil Shakir type player probably are not taking him in the first round.
There are teams like that. I've talked to one GM and it's just like, just look historically at the profile. Like this is not a top 15 player. Like the profile doesn't marry up. And I'm like, yeah, but to your point, some of the profile stuff is based on a game that's not the way it's played anymore.
I'd be very curious what type of offense that team runs, but we'll save that for later. We'll save that for later. I'll real quick before we just toss to our first break here, because like I said, I do want to hijack the show, and it's my show. I can do that to have the wide receiver discussion here. When you're just kind of bucketing these guys, because it's a very flavors based draft, right? Like the guys that are going to go early, whether round one, round two. Who are some of the players that you think maybe there is maybe a misunderstanding of, or there's a lack of consensus around that you feel really good about in those first 2 days?
Just for receivers, you know, there's a guy that I like that Steve Smith likes him because I did his show last week. So I just feel like some, and you do this, what you do wideouts, like you do enough of them, there's going to be guys that you feel like you're on Lonely Island. Like I watch Deion Burks and I see the way that he runs and I see the way that he gets in and out of breaks. And I'm like, he was in my top 50 initially. And I mean, I'm telling you, the internet, you would have thought that I just, you know, assaulted someone. Like it was like, how in the world? And it was like the analytics that came hard after me with like, if you just look historically at his analytics, I'm like, and nowhere in the discussion. And I just don't do the debates on social media. I don't do it. I'm not going to jump. There's no winning.
What's the point?
So I just sit back, but I'm sitting there. But for my own knowledge, look, it's good to be challenged. So let me go back in. Go back in. I'm like, I like what I have in my notes. Let me go back and look at the quarterbacks that he played with. Okay, let's go back to Purdue. It's like, look at the stats for the quarterbacks he was playing with until this last year with Mateer, who was, you know, okay. But like previously, it was awful. It was awful. And you can go back and watch the Purdue tape too. But like this guy, to me, I watched him and Branch, and I was seeing talk about Branch being a first-round pick or Branch being a high second-round pick. And I'm watching this dude just explode through the ball, like just explode through it. And look, it played to his speed. And then Branch, you know, I like he's quick gadget player, but like his feet are off the ground when he catches the ball, you know, way too often. He cradle catches everything. And yeah. And so I'm just like, you can't, all that speed doesn't play when both your feet are off the ground and you're catching the ball like this. This dude's freaking running through it when he did get his opportunities. I don't know. I thought it's like one of those deals where you're like, I'm just going to have to be okay with being on an island on that one.
Well, don't worry, buddy. And I swear I did not, you know, put DJ up to this. We've not talked about this at all. I'm actually with you on Deion Burks Island.
Really?
I'm with you on this one. Yeah, I really like the player. You know, day two guy, obviously. I think that's where we're looking at him, stuff like that. But yeah, and you mentioned the databasing stuff, and my buddy JJ Zacharyson does great. He's the best database prospector, I say it all the time, out there, because he's got a really good, like, balanced view of this stuff. I was on his show, and I wanted to bring up Deion Burks because I know that his data based analytics, database scouting does not like Deion Burks. So I was like, we got to talk about Burks because this is from JJ's draft guide. Burks posted a 1.35 career yards per route run rate, third worst in the class. Since 2020, his model tracked 24 wide receivers entering the league with the career yards per route run below 1.5. The best case from a production standpoint of that group is like Josh Palmer, which like, number three receiver. But despite that, and like I brought Burks up, and JJ's like gonna laugh me off his show, which is fine. We're friends. Mm-hmm. He can do that. But I'm telling you, I think there's something to this guy. And I told the thing that really stands out with Burks is one, the toughness, and two, he's just so competitive working back to the football against zone coverage. Like he runs his routes, his stop routes, his curl routes, his hitches, and he'll get himself back into the throwing window. I think he's a really smart player. He's obviously explosive. And at the LSU game, he definitely got swallowed up by press man coverage against good corners on the outside. That's going to happen. He's 5'10", 180, but he's just so explosive. And I think a better route runner than credited when he gets snaps on the outside. I really like Deion Burks, and it's so funny. You took the words out of my mouth. I said, if Branch can be a day two pick, Burks, I think, I don't care about the production. I think offers more upside, more explosiveness in a similar and perhaps more expanded role than that. So I really like Deion Burks as well.
Yeah. I don't have my list in front of me, my final list. I think he ended up in like the low 60s maybe, which puts him like in the bottom of the second round. So, but I mean, look, in wide receivers, there's so many of them, different flavors. But I just think if we looked up in 3 years from now, he ends up being a top five or six receiver in this draft, I wouldn't be totally shocked on that at all.
Yeah, like a Jaden Reed type role, you know, where he's maybe a slot-only guy, but you can run with him after the catch, and he's going to give you more pop down the football field than you think. Like Jaden Reed is going to take 2024.
The Packers will take him, and then they'll go back from having a logjam to having a new logjam. And so they can just spread everything out, and everybody can be left wanting more from everybody.
It's either going to be a guy like this or a big bodied receiver with a lot of traits. It's going to be one of the two, but 100% I've said they're taking a receiver at some point so people can get ready for that logjam. All right, I'm glad we had the Deion Burks conversation, because I have also felt very lonely on Deion Burks Island, so I'm glad
we
can at least
get some property together. Steve Smith was a Burks guy, which caught me off guard, and then you. So maybe there's more of us out there, I guess.
There's DJ. There's dozens of us. There's dozens of us, Deion Burks guys. We've just been too. We've just been too afraid.
Three of which don't have the same last name. Yeah.
There we go. We'll just we'll see if we can admit it at some point here pretty soon. All right, we're gonna take our first quick break. When we come back, we're getting more favorite player to team fits. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. We're with Daniel Jeremiah on Mock Draft Monday, getting favorite player to team fits. I've hijacked the show enough with wideouts. Let's get back into the trenches here for your third favorite player to team fit, DJ.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the trenches here. A couple different places I could look at here, but I'm going to go with the Chargers, and I'm going to go with Venga Yuane from Penn State. I don't think he's going to get there, but this is just the, you know, you see the consensus rank. I have him higher than that. I think he's like my 11th guy. But nice. He can do everything in a world where it's like, oh, gap scheme, zone scheme, like he can do everything. And he's got vice grips for hands. Once his hands are on you, the down's over. He can anchor. He's firm and pass pro. They moved him around a bunch, did some creative stuff with him because of his athleticism, let him kind of move around and just peel dudes off. So I just think when you have Mike McDaniel and you have those two tackles that they have there, you have the backs that they have, which is going to be a lot of fun. It's, man, that is the spot. You see Penning is at left guard right now. This dude just plugs right into there. He's next to Rashawn Slater. And I just think of the creativity and messing with people's eyes and creating a little doubt, a little hesitation at the second level. And then you're going to get swallowed up by this offensive line.
I am so excited about this Chargers offense. And obviously, DJ's got a lot of connections there. He calls Chargers games. This is going to be a good conversation about this Chargers team here, even beyond just the Venga Ione fit, and which would be great. Like, Ione's a stud, man. He's probably just the cleanest interior offensive lineman evaluation in this class. I think he's going to be a good, just, he'll be at least a double for the team that takes him. I think he's going to be a good starter on the interior. The funny thing about him potentially fitting with this Chargers team, DJ, is that, and I know you know this watching every game, the funny part about the Chargers last year is, yeah, they had the offensive tackle injuries, but by the time we got to the end of the year, Herbert's getting a lot of pressure just like right up the middle, and it was like, that's where their starters are.
Yeah.
It
was a tough one.
So I think they do clearly need
Bradley. Mm-hmm. Bradley Bozeman retired, and they brought in Biotish. So that's already that piece of it has already been massively upgraded. So Cole Strange was, you know, that one was a little surprising, but then you're just like, well, look, Mike McDaniel had him. He thinks he fits and loves him, you know, with all the movement stuff. That's who he is and what he does. So I know there's a lot more confidence in the building with where they are, but I still feel like Penning's is better as a swing backup than he is a starter.
I would agree with that. It's pretty clear that McDaniel's got a good bit of sway in what they're bringing in personnel-wise. Did you see the Ortiz went out, I think, at a GM press conference and said that McDaniel put wanted posters throughout the building for Keaton Mitchell and Alec Engel? Did you see that?
Yeah, I did hear that. So, it's going to be fun. For someone who gets to call the games each and every week, it's going to be fascinating to see the marriage between Harbaugh and what he's traditionally been about and what he's done, and then Mike McDaniel. I do think their commitment to want to be good at running the football is similar, but man, it's going to be a drastic scheme shift. But if they keep the two tackles healthy, they might have the two tackles that are, you know, the most versatile tackles in the league and the combination of each other. Like they can do anything.
Yeah, that it's pretty exciting. And that's why I think from a fantasy standpoint, certainly, like, I'm going to want to be pretty heavily exposed to this Chargers offense just because from a schematic standpoint, I don't think people are realizing how different it's going to look. Like, they were one of the teams that played 3+ wide receivers on the field at the highest rate last year, which makes sense. They had a good receiver room, and obviously Keenan Allen's a guy that you want, you know, you want him in the slot. You want Ladd McConkey in the slot, so you want some of that there. I just think Ladd McConkey is one of the biggest screaming bounce back candidates in the NFL this year from a production standpoint. That's a big part of it. And because of that, DJ, like, one of the things that's going to help him get there is how heavy this team is going to be. They're going to have a fullback there on the field. They're going to have 2+ tight ends on the field, as we saw them invest in Charlie Cole, or they have Gadsden from last year. When that happens, a lot of the targets end up funneling to the number one wide receiver. We saw it with JSN last year with the Seattle Seahawks. They got into these heavy packages and just threw the football down the field. I think that's a lot of what's going to happen with this Chargers team this year. It does start, though, with continuing to build up the offensive line.
Yeah, and that's why I love that fit. And they're kind of in no man's land because they're probably going to miss out on him. And then there's not really a guy, in my opinion, that's worth where they're selecting in the first round. So that puts them as a trade-out candidate.
It's a good call. Trade-out candidate would be good. How do you stack just this offensive line class up? Do you see the strength? Because I think it's going to be a pretty heavy offensive line first round. How do you kind of stack these guys up from a positional standpoint?
Yeah, there's a lot of depth. There's not a Joe Alt or Slater in this draft, so just taking that team, you know, as an example. But there's just a lot of really solid starters, and that's why I think we see you know, six or seven of these guys go off the board in the first round. It's a big number. So I have it Maui Noah, then Fano for me, then, you know, Venga is his own deal. And then you've got Iheanacho, the last one on that list, him and Blake Miller. I think there's a chance one of those guys falls out of one. Like Blake Miller, but I think there's a chance one of those guys could slide to top of two. Monroe Freeland's going to go in the top 20. There's too much heat and buzz on him. He's got all the upside in the world, but there's not like this lock, you know, surefire. There's not a Panay Sewell in there. You know, those guys we've traditionally seen go all the way up there. It's not that type of group, but, I think you're looking on this list and all seven of these guys are going to be starting next year.
Yeah, I see that too. I mean, Iheanacho is a really tempting player. I almost would struggle to see him be the guy that falls out of round one, but Blake Miller definitely is one I've heard enough buzz. Like there's
mixed I think that 7 and 6, in terms of how they come off the board, will probably be flipped.
Yeah, that would make sense to me. I think the consensus has just been a little slow to pick up on the Iheanacho heat there, but yeah, it's a fun class, and it kind of the way you're describing it seems very eye of the beholder. Our fourth favorite player to team fit here that you've got is a Malachi Lawrence fit, and I'll tell you, DJ, this guy's been brought up I think like four straight mock draft Mondays in a row, so there's a lot of buzz on Malachi Lawrence, but I don't think anyone sent him to the same spot either. So where are you sending Malachi Lawrence for your fourth favorite player to team fit?
Well, I've put San Francisco. I just love that jet front, that attack front that they run, widen him out, free him up, and let that 4.52 speed play. Like he's got legit get off, big time juice. So an attacking front I would absolutely love. The other team that I've heard connected to him, by the way, is the Cowboys. So that could be, you know, a little bit of a surprise there. They picked 20. That would be a little bit earlier than folks expect, but I think at least that conversation comes into play there with them. So I wouldn't sleep on that one. But yeah, putting him on the opposite side, you know, hopefully with a healthy Bosa, that pass rush was awful last year, and that would kind of crank it up. And then you've got Mikel there as well. So that'd be a good fit.
Yeah, if I had more space in my brain, I'd remember exactly where everybody sent him on Mock Draft Monday, but I'm pretty sure working off the dome that Josh Norris sent him to the Chargers at 22. Dane Brugler last week sent him to the Bills at 26. And you've got him 27 to the Niners, plus highlighting that maybe Dallas at 20. So that feels like the range there for Lawrence somewhere, which, by the way, still, again, from a consensus ranking standpoint, this guy is outside, like, I believe the top 30 last time I checked on the consensus board. Yeah. So it does seem like there's much more steam for him with what people are seeing and hearing than kind of the larger draft consensus right now.
He's a great test study for me because it's a little bit of anchoring for me. So when I watch him, his name hadn't come up at all. I think he was at East West. He wasn't even at the Senior Bowl. So there was there was just not a ton of buzz on him. So I watch him and then I put him in my top 50, like is my 46th or 47th player. I hear from a bunch of teams like, man, that was going to be our guy, like our, you know, guy we were hoping to get in like the third round. It looks like he's not going to be there at that point in time. But I think I've really put myself out there, like throwing this guy at like 46 or whatever I put him. And then now we get to the end of the process and the train just went buzzing right past me to the point where it's like, gosh, I guess I'm the low guy. I'm the low guy on this dude. And I thought I was on the front of the line here. But you feel somewhat anchored to where you first put him. I always will go back at the end of the process and I want like, okay, where was my first list where I first saw him? And if I've traveled too far of a distance, I need to double check and make sure I'm not messed up here. So I always keep guys somewhat anchored to where I first have them.
Do you think, DJ, that's maybe a little bit of a statement, obviously, on Lawrence, but also maybe a statement on the draft class, where I said this earlier, and I know a few other folks have said this. I believe we talked about this with Dane last week, where teams are really trying to hit doubles. They're trying to get on base in this class because they don't view it as that like sexy of a class. But when you look at Lawrence, 6'4", 253 with the 95th percentile 95th percentile 40-yard dash, 96th percentile in the vertical jump, 97th according to mockdraftable.com and the broad jump. Like the testing is just outrageous on him. Do you think maybe it's because like teams are, all right, now we're in the 20s. We're chasing a little bit of ceiling in what's an otherwise maybe unsexy draft class.
Yeah, and I think that once you get into the 20s in this draft, and it's a lot of drafts are like this, but the 20th and the 50th, they're all carrying the same grade. So at that point in time, those teams are close to, you know, chasing the prize, close to being Super Bowl teams. And it's like, okay, let's take a little bit more of a risk here. Let's take a swing and see if we can't maybe hit it big on one of these guys versus taking another player that you're not quite as excited about. I think when you're picking in the top 15, normally you're a bad team and you can't afford to miss. Like, you've got to put a brick in place. Like, you've got to start building the foundation. Whereas in you're picking towards the bottom of the round and you're like, we're one or two players away. Let's go ahead and take a little bit of a swing here.
Well, and all these teams we've talked about can probably feel that they're one or two swings away, or if they hit this big home run with Malachi Lawrence, whether it's San Francisco, Buffalo, obviously the Chargers who we just talked about. But you did mention the Cowboys. I would be remiss. Producer Colin, a big Cowboys fan, would be furious at me if I didn't just pull on that thread real quick. Do you buy these rumors about the Dallas Cowboys being like a big-time trade-up team, or are you more they want to stick and pick at 12 and 20 and maybe get two guys as opposed to one big-time player in the top 10?
I have not heard anything on the trade-up stuff with them. So, you know, okay. But again, everybody talks to different folks. I have not heard that yet. So maybe that's something that I just haven't got to, but I have not heard anything. And it doesn't really kind of fit the way that they've operated as of late, which has been a lot more conservative. They have not been, you know, that type of a team. So fits to me more with, you know, hey, where they are, get two starters or even, you know, maybe one of those picks that, like, if they like Malachi Lawrence, maybe that's a situation where, hey, we'll take the 20, maybe we slide back a few spots and still can get him and then pick up some extra picks. But, you know, I'm trying to find a partner for them and who that would be and who the player would be. I mean, I think there's a chance they could sit there at 12 and they could be, you know, Downs could just fall right into their lap. Like, I don't know that you got to be super, super aggressive and jumpy there.
Yeah, that's been something as we've had this conversation that I've maybe thought about too, is that, yeah, there's a chance, which safeties are weird, man. You never know. Safeties might end up falling right to you there at 12 and you're in a pretty good spot there. So we'll see. Our own Charles Robinson, by the way, reported that he has not heard a ton of buzz on the trade up idea as well. So we'll see. They'll be one of the more interesting teams to watch in the first round. I mentioned that a ton of people have brought up Malachi Lawrence over the course of this show. Your fifth and final favorite player to team fit, I don't believe we've talked about at all yet. So very excited to hear your thoughts on this player.
Yeah, I want Kyle Lewis, you know, linebacker, hybrid player, you know, a little safety action as well, going to the Seattle Seahawks just because they would know exactly how to deploy him. And if you look at that team and try and find any weaknesses at all, I think the linebacker position, some coverage stuff showed up. You see it against the Rams. And all of a sudden, now you drop in, you put him in, and you could use him in sub initially if you wanted to before finding a full-time role for him. But Ernest Jones, I mean, he's going to come in. He's just so much better in coverage. Like, he is one of the best coverage players in this draft, regardless of position. So you put him out there, and now you've got you talk about having the chess pieces. I mean, with Eamon Worry and him and Witherspoon, like, you got guys you can move all over the place and do so many different things with. I just think that'd be a really fun player for them to play with.
Where do you think, like, his draft range is, or is that kind of like a moving target?
Day two. I mean, he's just outside my top 50. He might be my 52nd or 55th player, like, somewhere in there. So that puts him, you know, middle to back two is where I see him. But if he ended up being, if you told me, you know, he ends up being the 34th pick, I mean, that wouldn't shock me at all. It's just kind of a flavor thing once you get to the second round of this draft. So I think he goes in day two, more likely the second than the third, but there's no chance he gets out of the third.
We had this conversation, obviously, with Jordan Tyson way at the top of the draft, where it's just like, okay, you see this guy go, and then you see the team he lands with. I had this experience with Luther Burden last year when he went to the Chicago Bears. It's like, there's a good handful of teams Luther Burden goes to. He is not going to work out. But he goes to this team, it's going to work out. And for for Seattle, taking a guy like Kyle Lewis, he goes to the wrong team. It's pretty similar with Eamon Worry last year. Like, there's maybe 30 teams that it wouldn't have worked out for Nicky Eamon Worry, but there's one team where it definitely was going to work out, and that's the place that he went to. And it feels like Kyle Lewis, who, I mean, just is a
look at him cover coverage on this. Look line. At these clips.
Yeah, I mean, it's Right. This is what I'm saying here. Like, this, these one-on-one reps that we've got here from Marcus Mosier, this is what's pretty incredible about Kyle Lewis. That we're talking about a linebacker, and obviously he's undersized, but what they could do with him in this defense in particular, in that you mentioned scouting for your division, in a division with, if Arizona really can make it work with Mike LaFleur, like three teams that move guys around and kind of blur the line between slot and outside player, getting a guy like this could be pretty huge for a defense that's given all those offenses trouble anyways.
Yeah, it's a division that lives inside out. When you look at who the tight ends you're going to see and the slot receivers that you're going to see inside that division, and this guy is just going to be able to muddy that picture with what he can do. So I'm a huge fan of his game. And I just, I like you said, I hope he goes to the right spot where they know what the heck to do with him. But man, he is a smooth, fluid mover, and he has got unbelievable ball awareness. So, I'm just a fan of his game. And when you, this is how it is. I remember when you didn't like a player back in the day. There, I give you an example: the Colts. If you had an offensive lineman, you were a scout, and you graded poorly on a player, offensive lineman, you're like, this guy sucks. You'd be in the draft room, and all of a sudden it's like the fifth round, and the Colts take him, and you're like, oh, frick.
Oh, no.
Peyton can cover up everything this guy does wrong. Like, this guy's going to start for him and play for 10 years because the ball's going to be out, and they'll just – and you'll never – and it's, you're going to hear about it from your GM of, like, how the heck did you have a free agent grade on this guy? He's been a starter for 7 years. And then the other side of it is you have guys that you love, and you're like, oh man, please just go to a place that knows how to use this guy. I can't have this go to some dumpster fire where they're not going to be able to see what this guy can do.
I guess I actually always put it that way, that when you're scouting for all 32 teams, especially with a position like receiver, where it is so much like, what role do you have available? Do you know how to deploy guys the right way? It's always tough when destination really is destiny. That's true for every prospect. It's not just at any position. Destination really can be destiny for these guys. But I never thought about it on the team side too, DJ, where you're certainly going to hear about it if you have a fifth round grade on a guy and he goes in a spot and any of GMs come into your office like, hey, well, this guy, especially if they land in our division, he's tearing us up.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, well, had he gone to somewhere else, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
The conversation, if he came to us, this would not be happening. Like, that's the conversation. Like, yeah, that works for them. The line that I used to love in the draft room, and I think it's a good one, was just like, I'm fine playing against him. Like, he'll be a good player, but we're okay. We'll play against him. Like, we're fine with that. We'll go get somebody else.
It's a tough one. Yeah. Tough to give the internal scouting report when people don't want to hear what you've got to say anyways. All right, we are going to take our final quick break, and then we're going to get the player that Daniel Jeremiah is standing on the table for in this year's NFL draft. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back, and it is time for Daniel Jeremiah to stand on the table.
Captain, my captain.
Sit down, Mr. Anderson.
We have Bills Mafia here.
Let's go!
All right, DJ, I don't want you to – yeah, that's right. Everybody laughs at the segment intro. It's always funny. We probably should have included a shot of your broken desk that happened earlier offseason.
Yeah.
We'll get the Yahoo lawyers and your lawyers and all the people to talk, and maybe we can use that image for the segment intro next year. We'll see about that. But for now – let's get the player that you are willing to stand on the table for metaphorically in the 2026 NFL draft.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that came to mind, and I've had some similar questions and given some different players. But this one, you know, as we come late in the process, just going back through all my notes, I'm going to go R. Mason Thomas, the edge rusher from Oklahoma. And to me, you know, I think there's a chance he could sneak into one. To me, I view him more as a second round player, but this dude just plays so hard, and the way he gets – when he gets the top of his rush, his close to finish and the violence in which he finishes, I just love it. To me, there's an energy about him. I referenced Derwin James, Ray Lewis, guys I've been around. Like, I'm a believer and a buyer in energy for players, not just the ability. I think the energy on the defensive side of the ball is like a force multiplier. And this guy, you can feel his energy when you watch his tape. So I think a good team is going to draft. He's going to go to a team that already has a great defense because they're going to appreciate those things about him more so than even what you just see as the player.
I love it. So if you could, again, in this idea of, man, I like this guy. I want to stand on the table for him. He's 47th in the consensus rankings right now. So curious to see where you kind of have him bucketed. But if you kind of view him in, like we want him to go to the right spot, where is it going to work out for him? Where is the great destination? Like, what's the type of scheme? You don't have to give me a specific team necessarily unless you want to, but like the type of scheme, where would you really like to see him land?
Well, I think of like, to me, he's in a similar type of a player like Chenna, you know, Chenna Nwosu with, you know, with Seattle. So, I mean, obviously that would be one. You could put him right in there to Seattle. I think with, I look at a team like the Chargers who lost Owe, you know, and this all of a sudden now you get, you're an offensive tackle and you got to wrestle two Bears and Thule and Mack. And then all of a sudden this fastball just comes in that I got to freaking try and kick out and cover him up after that. Like you saw Owe went, you know, went off when he got over. I think he had 7.5 sacks after that trade. Some of it was just like, man, it's such a different look. That's another conversation for another podcast. We can do that in the off season, but talking to one of the teams, like we're starting to view our third rusher, like nickels and like slot receivers, like, we're just treating our third rusher like a starter because we want, you know, the last two Super Bowls, it's been waves, no double-digit sack guys, just waves from the Eagles, waves from the Seahawks. So teams are starting to treat that third guy as basically a starter. And that's how I envision him as being that guy, that fastball you got to deal with.
Makes a ton of sense. The more we go along through this sport and the more personnel packages are getting mixed up and the more we're throwing just all these different body types, it's like, yeah, our nickel is a starter. Our third receiver is a starter. Yeah, we probably want two running backs to cycle in here. You know what? We've got all these 12 and 13 personnel looks. Like, we're going to need a second tight end that can either really be a valuable receiver or even more preferably a guy who can play in line. So it's just, you need to have waves almost at every single position at this point, DJ.
Yeah, no, it is. And you look at some of the, you know, we've got some star players that have played on teams, you know, on the defensive front that haven't had a lot of success. And it begs the question, are you better off having that, you know, that one A plus? Are you better off having seven Bs that you can, you know, roll through there? You know, it's just kind of the way that the teams have done it in the team building process right now is just having waves of those dudes. So I think you're going to see it reflected in this draft with these edge rushers. There's a ton of them. And you could say, well, this team doesn't need one. That team's good. Like, no, they all want them. Even if they've got two of them or three of them, they want another one because they want to keep rolling those guys through.
Love it. All right, Daniel Jeremiah, this has been a great time. Really good conversation here with you, DJ. When is your top 150 coming out that the people can? Because you usually put the top 150 out like a couple days before the draft, right?
Yeah, draft week, so that's out. So that'll be out. You'll have access to that, I believe. So Monday is that's where we are. So it's out. You can go check that out. And then we've got the mock draft, the final mock draft show, which is Wednesday night on NFL Network. So we'll reveal that. And I was thinking of, did you ever see the from Serial the podcast? Did you ever see the Funny or Die video they did at the end of when that podcast was out? When she was like, I can't wait to hear who did it. Like, did you ever see that?
Yeah.
And he's like, they're like, Sarah, can't wait to see. Today we find out if Adnan, like, if is he guilty? Is he not guilty? And she's like, I don't know. So like, that's kind of what I'm like, when you're promoting a mock draft, like the week of, and you're like, everybody's like, man, I can't wait to see who we're going to pick. And I'm like, yeah, no, well, just tune in and we'll have that answer for you.
It'll definitely be totally correct. That's for sure. But no, that's why I want people to check out the top 150 because there's always one guy in there that does raise some eyebrows. I remember for me personally last year was I had been talking about this totally non-productive, which again comes back to the Jon Burks conversation, totally non-productive white big slot receiver from Arkansas that tested like a freak. And I was like, why isn't anybody talking about this guy? And then DJ's got him in the top 150. Lo and behold, the Lions trade up like multiple draft picks to get him.
Non-combine guy. See, I don't know. You'll never. The odds of you guessing it are probably not great. But non-combine wide receiver that's in my 150. I think I only had one. But see if you can figure out who it is. I thought I gave you like three or four guesses.
Is it people? He's Cyrus Allen. He was a non-combine guy.
Shut the front door. First guess.
That's right, baby. Like I said, decent son here helping my mom out at the condo down here in Florida. We'll decide if I'm a better wide receiver analyst or a son by the end of this process. But I think getting that right is great. He's going to be in the rookie roundup too, by the way, on my site. That's going to get posted the day of the draft. So the people will have their Cyrus Allen takes from DJ, and they'll have that from me here on draft week. Because, man, this thing is coming. And obviously, you guys out there are watching DJ on your TV for NFL Media's coverage of the draft. NFL Network, watch it. Of course, you're going to be watching that. But also, do make sure you're checking us out on Yahoo Sports, your second screen experience. I've got my computer. I've got my iPad here. Okay, so you guys are going to be doing the same thing. You'll be having two screens. You're going to check us out live Thursday and Friday for the draft on all of your social platforms, the Yahoo Sports YouTube page. You're going to see me, Nate Tice, Charles McDonald, Charles Robinson, and Andrew Siciliano breaking it down for the first two nights. But before we do get to draft day, we are going to have one last show here on the podcast feed. And DJ said it, it's we're going to do one last wish casting, okay? We're going to do one last little spot of sending these guys to dream landing spots, all right? We're going to do wish casting. Me and Justin Boone are going to send our favorite players in the draft to our favorite destinations before all of our hopes and dreams are dashed in just 2 days later. So that's going to be live at 2 p.m. Eastern on this YouTube channel. Until then, we are out.